Good afternoon, and may the Lord give you His peace. As we bring this week to a close, your daily message of hope is on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. This is Father Stosh Daly, joined by Brother Tommy Piolata, a member of the Capuchin Franciscans.
Howdy.
Welcome back, brother. Now, as we're on Friday, and we're looking ahead towards the weekend, we consider everything we've survived this past week. The ups, the downs, the side to sides, you know? And the Church invites us to consider, as a source of hope, as a wellspring of love, the great manifestation, the exposition of Christ's love for us that is found when we gaze upon Jesus on the cross. Mm-hmm. Now, Brother Tommy, the Capuchins, you guys, sometimes you look very ominous when you pull your hood up, you know? And on your habit, you not only have the cord, but you also have a chaplet.
Yep.
And on the chaplet, you have the crucifix. No, you don't
actually
have a crucifix.
Actually, we have just the cross.
So what happened to Jesus?
Yes. So this is unique to the rosary on a Capuchin habit. Our rosaries actually don't have a crucifix. They have a cross. And the idea is that we become the body on the cross. And our Capuchin habit is one piece.
Oh,
and
yeah?
The goal behind that was that if someone saw us from afar, they just saw a cross. So our Capuchin habit as one piece looks like the cross. That was...
But you don't tend to always walk with your arms outstretched.
Well, you know, I try to, but sometimes it gets heavy. No, I'm kidding. So the cross, though, and ergo the passion,
right,
as a whole, is really important to Franciscan spirituality and Capuchin spirituality in general.
Yeah. Now, in Rome, there's a Capuchin church.
There is. I know where you're going.
And in the crypt of that Capuchin church,
where you're going,
the Bone Church, the Bone Chapel, you can't help but see that there is a love for the Lord that breaks the chains of fear that surround death, and because your eyes are focused on something else. Now you realize we all have to pass through the doorway of death to get to the Lord, but that doorway that is death is not going to scare us.
No.
It can intimidate us.
It's a great feast.
Right.
In the Franciscan family, literally the passing over of St. Francis, the transitus, this transition.
And when does that usually take place? When do you guys celebrate that?
October 3rd.
Your eyes just got really big. Is there a bug behind me? I presume it wasn't the question.
Oh no, it's putting me on the spot. October 3rd. And then October 4th is the feast day of St.
Exactly.
Francis.
Exactly. Yes. Now, what is it about, like deep within the, let's say, the spirituality of the Capuchins in particular, there's this maybe appreciation for the limitation of life, the temporality of it all. You know, things are passing, things are fleeting, but your eyes are focused on the Lord. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in some of the Franciscan references, you'll hear Sister Death.
For sure.
You know?
And that's from just Francis himself.
That's kind of, I mean, to someone who's like foreign to all of this, it's like, wait, did Father just say Sister Death?
But you know, I think at the same time,
don't change the channel.
It speaks to our world.
Yes.
Remarkably.
Yeah.
Because as inevitably, as a kind of religious sense of life fades,
yeah,
you know, Pope Benedict said, we live in a world where the, where there's a kind of reign of secularism, you know, and a sense of wonder fades away.
Yeah.
As we live in this world, death does become the ultimate reality.
Yeah.
Sister Death familiarizes death.
Mm-hmm.
That death is not this enemy.
Right.
Right. That death is not, and that death is not the end.
Right.
That death is our sister.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we can see that if we think back to last year, or maybe we look ahead to this year, you know, you think Halloween.
Yeah.
For example, you know, people will put literally a graveyard in their front lawn.
Yeah.
But then when a loved one dies, they're like, oh, I just can't go to the cemetery. It's just too hard. It's like, wait a minute, you're going to put a fake cemetery in your front yard.
That's so true. That's really
But
ironic.
Then you're not going to go visit the place where the mortal remains of your loved one are going to be interred until the final judgment.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so I don't, you know, you'll dress all creepy and go scare half your neighborhood, not because your costume's good, but because they're shocked that an adult would actually dress like that, you know? And then when it comes to the reality that is something we all have to go through, death, you know, well, what's the issue? There's no hope. the theological virtue of hope has just been totally lost. And, you know, and there's a lot of people that have that. And of course, you know, we also look at the vanity within our culture today. And it was like, well, no, I don't want to look that old, but that's how old you are. Well, I mean, but I don't want to look like that. It's like, but there's something beautiful to the aging of the human body. You know, you think of someone like Mother Teresa of Calcutta, St. Teresa of Calcutta now. And in the eyes of the world, she was not necessarily the beaming success of visual beauty.
Yeah.
But from the eyes of faith, you see a woman who literally spent every waking moment in service of the Lord.
And she radiated.
And she did.
She radiated.
There was literally a glow around her, this glow of sanctity. But when you saw her,
St. John Paul II too, in his old age.
So many. But when they lived life and they lived it well, and they weren't intimidated by death, and they weren't scared by it. And you know, that's something very important, because we all have loved ones, friends and neighbors who, even perhaps right now, know of someone, or maybe they themselves, and they realize life is fleeting, life is passing. And when you meet somebody and they're afraid, and they're scared. Oftentimes you can see that, like, they're afraid to go to sleep at night, because the darkness of the night reminds us of what we're tempted to think is going to be what waits for us. But that's not it at all.
No.
And so then you have a beautiful message preached by, like, your religious family, the Capuchins, the Franciscans in general, Holy Father Francis himself, you know? And you can see it lived out in the life of St. Teresa of Calcutta or St. John Paul II. You know, St. John Paul II didn't just teach us how to live well. He taught us how to die well with faith and dependence.
Yeah, you know, I think I just had a recent conversation this past week with a Capuchin in my province, who's an older man, has given his life to the brothers, given his life to service, a truly beautiful friar.
Yeah.
And his body's falling apart.
Yeah.
And when I spoke to him on the phone, he said, "Oh, you know, I'm just gloriously falling apart." What an incredible saying, you know? He realized that his body is coming to an end, and yet he was able to use the term gloriously.
Yeah.
He wasn't afraid of it.
Because he knows Jesus.
He knows Jesus. He knows the Lord, and this is where life goes. And so now he's gloriously falling apart.
And you find in that not only a hope, but also a manifestation of love.
A deep manifestation
and there's
of
trust.
Love.
It's like, I know the Lord lives, and I know he's not going to drop me.
I think that's the key. Very interested and kind of fascinated by the Old Testament and the history of Israel, and but the faith and the development of the faith of Israel, and then of the Hebrew people. And the question of an afterlife wasn't so obvious at the beginning of the faith of Israel.
Yeah.
It developed. And it developed especially when they realized that God is alive.
Yeah.
That God is alive, and this means that death is not the final reality.
Right.
And so the realization of a quote-unquote afterlife developed in tandem with the realization of who God is, that he is the God of life and the God of love.
Yeah.
And so the more we enter into an appreciation of who God is, I think the more death itself becomes sister death.
Yeah.
And it becomes this transition that awaits us, that it's not the end, that it's a kind of birth.
Right.
You know, and it gives meaning to life.
Well, you know, it's interesting is when the more someone becomes convinced and they live the truth that Jesus lives and Jesus is waiting for us, not just then and there, but here and now, you're liberated from the chains that lead you to think that this is all that there is.
Yeah.
You know, and being stationed at a church that's downtown on a major thoroughfare with a bus stop, you know, I'll come popping out of the door and I'm in either my black shirt and black pants or my cassock, all black, you know, and it's like a billion degrees outside. And some guy's like, "Father, why are you dressed like that?" It's like, "Because I believe in death." And they're like, "Dude, you need help." You know, it's like, it's hot out, you're sweating, and you're wearing black. But it's like, no, but see, I wear this because I've died to the world. I'm not living by the chains of slavery that lead me to think that this is all I have, because that would be very sad.
Yeah.
I'm living for something else. I'm living for someone else. I'm living for the Lord. And it's incredible, you know, the colors of our garments as those who are set apart. Not only do they mean so much, but they communicate so much. You know, you see a priest walking down, you see a friar walking down, you see a sister walking down, you see the garments, you see the habit, it communicates another reality. And it challenges people sometimes. It's like, what is that all about? You know, you got this big hood and this white cord, three big chunky knots. You know, what is that? Well, ultimately, you are a reminder. We call you an eschatological witness.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. That's actually a compliment. You know, if you're like, eschata, what? That, they have that medicine for that. No, you're a witness to the eschaton, to the next life.
Yeah.
The way, you know, the way you are living now is the way we're all going to be living. Totally focused on Jesus. And that right there is probably the best invitation we can offer on this program to hope, is that, you know, we were made to live for the Lord. And he lives and he's waiting for us and he wants us. And whether you are a Franciscan, whether you are a lowly diocesan, whether you're sitting in your car making your way home, whether you're on your way into work now, regardless if it's been a long day and a stressful day or a relatively quiet and peaceful one, we all have to have that reconciliation with the truth that Jesus lives. Brother, we're at the end of the week. What are you going to throw out there to the people who are listening? Message of hope.
You know, I would say in the first writing of the New Testament that we have, St. Paul defends the resurrection of the body. It's almost one of the earliest worries that the followers of Jesus had. What happens when we die?
Yeah.
And so one of the first earliest writings after Christ defends the resurrection of the body. And this sets the stage for us that death is not the end. And so I think we can live with a kind of mindset that we are on a pilgrimage and that this pilgrimage has a glorious conclusion.
Yes.
If we live it according to the way in which the Lord has prepared for us, right?
Jesus lives. May he give you his peace. Amen.